Welcome to Not Another Marketing Podcast, where I'm talking to Veronica Sagastumi. She's a content marketing strategist, and we're going to be talking about making boring industries more interesting. You know, like accountancy and law and insurance. Have you fallen asleep yet? Wake up. This is a really interesting chat with Veronica. Now, she used to be a chief financial officer, a CFO, and is now a content marketing strategy consultant, specializing in industries like accountancy, law, and insurance. So we're going to be talking about how to make our content more interesting and also about how to introduce video marketing as well into those industries. Now, you can find Veronica on her website, which is veronicasagastumi.com. There's a link in the show notes. She's also on LinkedIn and Facebook and Instagram, so pop along and say hello. All the links are in the show notes. Now, can I quickly mention that Not Another Marketing Podcast is totally ad-free. There's no adverts anywhere. So I'd love it if you could give the pod a quick shout on social media, subscribe via your podcast app, find more podcasts as well at jtid.co.uk/podcasts. Now then, let's get on with it. Right. So the first thing I asked Veronica was, boring industries tend to be boring because we don't enjoy dealing with them, like accounts, law, insurance and that. Does the content we create for these industries need to be boring?
Not at all. And that's one of those myths that I love to debunk, especially, you know, what traditionally, yes, accounting firms, insurance, finance, law, those industries tend to be really interesting to other accounting, law, yeah, insurance professionals. But there, you know, it's the platform is changing. And so in order for those businesses to grow in this online space, they need to embrace social media. And part of that is understanding that they need to create content. And so there's been a bit of an education that's been, you know, that's the shift that I'm seeing is they traditionally, the way that they created content was very structured and using a lot of their industry terminology. But when you show up in the online space and using social media, they have to relax a little bit and they have to become more personable because people buy from people. Mm. And so the customers that they are trying to not only attract and connect with to ultimately convert into a client, they have to humanize themselves. And a lot of times the way to do that is by creating content that is relatable. And that means stop with the industry jargon, stop with the industry terminology that only other industry members are going to recognize. And instead, show up. And the best tip that I can give here is create content that also includes and gets accompanied by a story, a case study, an example, something that your audience, the people you're trying to attract and connect with, will see themselves in, that they will be like, oh my gosh, that was me, or oh my goodness, that was my assistant or my brother-in-law, whoever. They start to recognize themselves in the story that you're sharing. And by sharing a story, you start to, you know, we get to know the human behind this business, which traditionally, like you said, it's a bit dry, it's a bit boring to some people who may not truly understand what is the benefit.
Yeah. Do you think sort of like accountants and lawyers, insurance people and all that sort of thing, do you think they get the feeling that when people come and see them, they don't really want to be there? I mean, when you go to your accountant, it's going to cost you money, isn't it? You've got to write a check at the end of the day. So do you think they get the feeling that nobody actually wants to be there, which then can somehow psychologically affect what they put on their website in a way?
I mean, it could be absolutely construed that way. It's kind of like going to the dentist, right?
Yeah.
It's a necessity. You have to go to the dentist, yeah, if you don't want to lose all your teeth. But nobody, I don't know anybody that absolutely loves going to the dentist, maybe one or two, but not the norm. And that's part of what I've been working with clients on is to how do you not convince, but educate your audience to learn about things that you can do for them. So to change the perception of you're going to cost me money if I go see an accountant, a tax professional, or a lawyer. How are you going to save me money? How are you going to keep me compliant or out of trouble? Start to, as an accounting or insurance or law professional or business owner, your job is to educate your potential client as to what you can do for them to ultimately either save them money or reduce a cost or keep them compliant so that they have peace of mind. That peace of mind is priceless. It's so valuable that they don't spend enough time highlighting the benefits of having all your ducks in a row, so to speak. For example, if you're a consultant and you don't have a contract that's maybe been reviewed by an attorney, that could cost you money later on. I actually know of somebody who just recently was out thousands and thousands of dollars because the contract was never signed. And the contract that was sort of like agreed upon was never reviewed by an attorney. And so there were all these different clauses that gave the paying client a loophole, and the contractor was left, with a huge bill all after services were rendered. And that's the kind of thing where an attorney could say, I can save you money. I can keep you from, having this scenario in your business. And it'll, the cost of a review of your contract is minimal compared to the peace of mind that you'll have in knowing that you have a solid contract that you can enforce, once you have an engaging client. So yeah, I think it's an education that we need to have in place to change people's perception.
Yeah, I think you mentioned a minute or two ago about sort of like it's business to people. It's not necessarily business to business, and I think that's quite a key thing. I mean, I'm a big believer, like you, of there's no such thing as B2B. It's business to person, because it's a person who buys, isn't it?
Exactly. At the end of the day, it is the person that signs the contract or, agrees to the payment and or engaging the service. Absolutely. It's the person.
So how do we make things more interesting? Must the accountant talk about tax or not? Or do we just try and make tax interesting, which then it will never be interesting, will it?
I mean, if you can think of one of the things that I really work with clients on is, you have to use stories. You have to go to your vault or your bank of who have you worked with and what are some of the most interesting cases or even people that you have met and how was that interaction? And I can think of, one of my closest friends, my childhood friends, she is an insurance broker. And here I'm in Northern California, and I don't know, John, if you know what's been going on here, but our state has been burning up. We have one massive fire after another.
Yeah.
And she recently was telling me how one of our mutual friends had purchased this vacation home, and she had just closed 2 weeks prior to one of the raging fires where everybody was being evacuated. And she shared with me how she really walked our mutual friend through why she should get higher coverage, and just educating her about where she was in the fire zone, from past history. And basically, long story short, our mutual friend agreed to get the higher fire policy. This was 2 weeks prior to us knowing that there was going to be this massive fire, and her brand new vacation home was going to be in the line of fire, so to speak. I mean, I hate to use that, but that in itself, just sharing a story about a real life scenario, you start to educate people about, someone who has a vacation home in that area would pay attention to a story like that. If you have a story about, a legal contract or a tax situation or an audit, something that happened to an actual client, you don't have to give their name or their business name, nothing like that. You're not divulging any privacy. But sharing a story that goes with the policy change or the why or the rules and regulations, the story in itself can humanize that topic. And it will now make that topic more relatable, because they're probably not going to remember exactly the rule that you cited or the law, the case that you were citing, that you were, saying you have to do this. But they'll remember the story because on some level they'll connect with it. Or they'll connect with it through another person that they know that whose situation was very similar.
Is the house okay?
Was it's one of those things we don't have hurricanes here in Northern California, but the fire jumped and it was on the other side and it skipped that whole neighborhood. So her house was okay from the fire, but she was so grateful to our friend who was the insurance agent who walked her through the case scenarios using other people's stories, other case scenarios to educate her. And that just, again, it really solidified what the insurance broker was trying to educate her on.
So it's like human case stories, I suppose, isn't it? Case studies,
Exactly, exactly.
Now, whenever I've come into contact with a lawyer or an accountant, insurance person, anybody like that, in work, scenarios, they've always enjoyed explaining law or explaining tax and money and schemes and things to us. But how do we branch away from that? Should we be aiming for something more than just explaining tax? Because it's very difficult to get people to stop doing this, I think.
Absolutely. I think that one of the focuses is, you know, I'm going to actually take a step back because I've lived in that world. I mean, I spent 20 years in my corporate career was in accounting, finance, and dealing with a lot of attorneys and insurance people. I understand that person or that business owner that we're referring to. And yeah, they can get very passionate and go down this rabbit hole of just trying to give us all this data, all this information. And part of what these business owners in these industries need to recognize is that you have to engage in a relationship, in a conversation, as opposed to speaking to that person, at that person. You want to start and continue a conversation, and it has to go two ways. And it may be they have to understand that they need to ask questions about the business owner and get more information about what's going on in their business. Having a genuine interest in the person that they're speaking with, as opposed to speaking at. And that takes time. It's a habit that, you know, many of us adopted, and you know, we think that we need to continue to be that way in order to have a business and come across as being a professional. And that's another myth that I love to debunk. It's like, just because you become more personable and you really focus on building a long-term relationship, and a long-term relationship requires you to get to know the person, not just speak at them and throw a bunch of data points at them.
So should we build some sort of strategy, do you think, to help manage our content for sort of like these traditional industries?
So I think in terms of if you're the business owner of these industries, you need to think about what is it you don't know what you don't know. Let me start by saying that. Yeah. Because most of these business owners have been in a traditional setting, where it's either a firm or a practice where it's an actual office space and you have employees or contractors that work for this firm. Nowadays, you know, because we're living in this pandemic, in this year of a pandemic where everybody was sent home and forced to work remotely or figure out a way to work remotely. And if these business owners didn't figure that out or don't adapt this new way of doing business, they're going to be left behind. Their business will hurt, and in some cases already has hurt them. By embracing this remote virtual setting and knowing that they have the opportunity to have a greater reach and deeper impact by reaching more people, they need to understand that they can't do business as usual. What worked for them in this offline brick and mortar type of setting will not work and will not translate well in this online space. And so by them not knowing what they don't know, they need to at least be open to the fact that they need to either hire someone to help them to come up with a strategy. And a strategy means you don't just create content that, you know, hope and a prayer. Those are two words that do not belong in business. You can't just like, well, I hope it works.
Yeah.
Well, I, you know, I'm praying that it'll work. It doesn't work like that.
Sure.
A strategy means having a thoughtful process or an intention behind what you're going to create in order to get the result that you want. And sometimes that requires you to hire someone who knows how to do it, or at the very least, who's going to help you to strategize and then you go and implement.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting you mentioned about like the competition side of it. I think since the internet, the competition for these traditional industries has increased, well, a millionfold, hasn't it? Because in the olden days before the internet, there'd be like two lawyers, two accountants in the town, and every business in the town or everybody in the town would deal with them. Mm-hmm. And that's it.
Exactly.
But whereas now we can kind of like our accountant can be 1,000 miles away if we wanted them to be, couldn't they?
Absolutely. That's the age that we're living in now. You're not restricted to do business with your local community only. Absolutely, you want to do business with them still, but you can have a much greater reach. And that translates into growing your business online. You can still have your office space. You can still have your local community. You can, when we get back to networking and attending our different workshops and events, where that's traditionally where accountants, lawyers, bookkeepers, finance analysts, or financial advisors get their business, right? From those types of events. We're not there. So you're having to pivot and figure out, how do I show up online so that I can still attract, connect, and convert clients? And you can't do it the same way as you did it in person.
Yeah. Should we do a little bit of research before we decide to put our strategy in place? Should we try to figure out what our clients actually want to hear before we start tapping away at the keyboard and writing thousands of words?
Absolutely. And that is one of those things where people get so excited about, I'm going to show up online and I'm going to start creating content, and they think they know. But if they don't do the research, and research could look in a lot of different ways, but if they don't ask, or at the very least, see what's going on and what people are interested in and what people are sort of like reacting to or really having a favorable, you know, sort of reaction to, you're going to be throwing spaghetti at the wall and figuring out what, you know, you're not going to know what sticks. So just by doing a little bit of research, for example, you could ask a close circle of clients that you already have, you know, where do you hang out? Where do you go to get more information? What are you interested in? What are you worried about? Just having maybe even just 4 or 5 questions. That could be one way. Another way is I like to reach out to maybe 5 to 10 people and create what I call either Skype or Zoom quick chats. Because when I'm asking those questions and I can see them on video and I can see I asked a question that really resonated with them or that they had a reaction to, I can then ask follow-up questions, which will give me so much more data. And by recording the video chat, I'm able to get their words, their reaction, and their tone. So that becomes such a valuable piece of research, because then now I can create content that is maybe answering the questions that they have or addressing the concern that they expressed. So the research doesn't, you know, it's not like in the old days, you know, old school. I know that, you know, I was a teenager in the 80s. So research was going to the library. John, you know, we went to the library to do research. We had to check out books and we had to, you know, go down this rabbit hole of reading a lot. Yeah. Nowadays, we can reach out, go do a direct message on LinkedIn, do a direct message on Instagram, reach out to your, you know, send a text to a contact. There are so many ways that you can do research, and it starts by asking a question or look at a competitor that's crushing it online and see what they're putting out. You don't want to copy, never that, but you want to pay attention to what are they talking about? Who are they talking to? And that's the other thing with research. Who do you want to attract? Because you can't be an accountant or a lawyer or a bookkeeper for everybody. Niching down is so important. And all that niching down means is be specific about who do you want to help?
Yeah, that's really interesting. You say going out there and kind of like asking questions to people. Do you think we could also kind of like have a word with reception as well and say, whenever you have a phone call, write down the questions that people ask?
That is a great idea. Seriously, it's a great idea, because that's when you start compiling like what I call your data bank, right? Your data bank of what are the frequently asked questions that people are coming up with? Because now you can create such a valuable piece of content, whether that is a quick training, a video. And by the way, I think I heard you on another podcast, John, where you said you do not enjoy video.
No, I don't.
I hear you, because in my line of work, you know, with the people that I'm working with, they also don't enjoy video. And the way that I introduce them into it is I say, you don't have to be on camera, but could you share your desktop and do a walkthrough where they're listening to your voice and you're showing them how to do something, or you're introducing them to something that you found helpful or interesting. And so that's the kind of thing where if your receptionist is gathering these questions that people are asking, and you now have a data bank of frequently asked questions, you can look at those and think about the different types of content that you can create, because people learn differently. Some are like to read a blog or a caption. Others like to listen, you know, whether it's a podcast or an audiogram. Others like to watch a video and also watch the captions, or, you know, watch whatever's being shared on screen. But you can create so many different pieces of content to answer that frequently asked question. It's very powerful.
It's really interesting, actually, you say that, because you're kind of like looking at the audience and you're looking at, say, I don't know, we've got a 25-year-old startup business, you know, somebody who's 25 years old and they're starting up their first business and that sort of thing. They will want to digest content about tax and stuff like that in a slightly different way than an old man like me.
And that's why we have so many different platforms that deliver the same content. Yeah. You know, that's the beauty of it.
So when we look at content marketing in itself, a lot of people just think it's the website, it's the blog, it's that horrible news section in the corner, the top right-hand corner of your website. But it's not just that, is it? Can we include social media in our content marketing strategy as well?
Absolutely. And I think it's almost like leading with the content marketing or the content messaging that we share on social media. Its purpose, and I will share this, a lot of people will ask me, what's the point? What's the point of being on social media?
Yeah.
The point is that that's a platform that allows you to deliver your message, that where people can get to know you, that whole know, like, and trust factor. People are not going to buy from you. They don't know who you are or invest in your services. But social media allows you to be a platform where you can deliver your message, and your message can be a combination of, solving a problem, being an answer to their question, getting them through a challenging time. And then it is about getting that traffic on your social media channel to then come back to your website, where you can then deepen the relationship by either pointing them to a more in-depth blog post or an article that you've written or podcast episodes that you have been on, or invite them to fill out a form where they can hop on a chat with you, a free consultation, so to speak, to get to know you better. So you can start the conversation through this content marketing that you're sharing on social media, but you're going to continue the conversation and build a deeper relationship by bringing that traffic back to your website.
You would always default in a way, I suppose, traditionally. You'd kind of like go accountants, lawyers, insurance, all that sort of thing, and you go LinkedIn, wouldn't you? Just say LinkedIn.
That's
LinkedIn for a start. But is Facebook and Twitter and Instagram, are they useful as well in the mix?
Absolutely, because I think we need to recognize that our clients are going to be at different stages of their business, and they're going to be in different age brackets. And they're, like you mentioned earlier, they'll want to absorb the content in different ways. And so while LinkedIn is a very strong and traditional platform for the more professional type of industries, like we've been mentioning, focusing on the accounting, insurance, law, financial advisors, you're going to find them on LinkedIn. But you know what? You're also going to find them on other platforms like Instagram, like Pinterest, like YouTube, because they are going to be different platforms, but it allows you to share the messaging in different ways. So you can't just assume, again, we go back to doing some research. You can't assume that those clients for those traditional businesses are all on LinkedIn. Now, traditionally in pre-pandemic and, before anybody started to adopt social media, sure, LinkedIn was more of like a job placement platform. But those days are gone. I mean, just recently, LinkedIn introduced stories because they need to be competitive with the Instagrams and the Facebooks and the TikToks of the world. And they need to be competitive with their audience that exists on LinkedIn. But the clients that those other business owners are looking for, they are not just on LinkedIn. They are existing in those other platforms, which is why they need to repurpose their content and show up in different platforms as well. You don't have to be in all the platforms, just maybe two primary ones and maybe a complementary one.
Let's go back to video a second, because I've walked into like accountancies and accountant practices and legal firms before, and I've said, you need to do some videos for your website, you need to do some videos for social media. And everybody has just gone white like a ghost.
Yeah.
They've just gone, my days, not a chance. How do you get over that, or do you just pick the young person in the corner who's willing to do it?
No, not at all. I've even had, I think it was just this week, one of my clients is not an accountant. They're a chiropractic office. I said, hey, we're going to be blocking out a couple of hours and we're probably going to be doing about 20 videos. And their first reaction was like, about what? I just started laughing. I said, okay, don't worry. I will help you to kind of like lay out what it's going to be. And a lot of times people get so stuck about, I don't know what to say. What's the point? Nobody's going to, it's all these objections. And it's my job to sort of walk them through. Listen, being on video, there are so many different ways you can do it. It is irresponsible for you not to share tips, best practices, strategies that your clients will benefit from. And so we just have to come up with a way and frame the video in a way that you're going to feel comfortable showing up. I almost always start them off with sharing a desktop or doing a review of equipment or software or something that has just come out, like a new rule or a new policy, but in a way that, again, shows them with a story or talking to another colleague within their office. Now, I will say this. In the corporate world, we had this thing called, especially I have a background in a lot of tech and software, and we always had this, before we rolled anything out live, we would have a sandbox. And that just means a place where we could test things out before we rolled it out live.
Yeah.
And so what I also ask my clients to do is to create what I call a secret Facebook group or something that is a private setting, like an Instagram account that's private, or again, a secret Facebook group. A secret Facebook group cannot be found by anybody. You only need one other person to invite them to it. Once they accept, you can remove them. So it's just you. And you can then practice. Practice how to go live. Practice how to do a video. Where do you look? How are you going to sound? What's the volume? All those little things that you are nervous about. What are you going to talk about? How are you going to sound? You got to get over yourself, because your content, the message that you're delivering, that helpful tip that you're going to want to share with your client that's going to give them peace of mind, that's more important than how you look on video. And so a lot of the times when you're not comfortable on video, it just means you either have not found a way to show up online through video that is comfortable to you, or you are not quite there yet where you're showing up. It's a mindset issue. You got to shift it. You're showing up for your client, the person that needs to hear from you, the person that you need to help today, as opposed to showing up for yourself and you're not having a good hair day. Yeah. It doesn't matter. The content takes precedence. It takes priority over everything else.
Sure. And it kind of like builds trust and authority with people as well when they see you and they hear you.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
It is one of the fastest ways to build that know, like, and trust factor, because people are seeing you. And you know, one of my favorite things is when you're doing something live, whether it's Facebook or Instagram or YouTube, anything else, where something goes wrong. Because your audience is not, you're making it real for them. You're making it okay for them to not be perfect and to be like, how did that person react to that thing going off? Like, oh my gosh, the webcam just stopped working, or my audio went in and out, or the earpod. I mean, this has happened to me. The earpod fell out of my ears. And I'm like, hang on, I can't hear anything. So you add a little humor and you make it okay for them. That's the whole thing about the human behind the business, making it relatable. We're too hard on ourselves. Relax.
Yeah, you're
it's
absolutely
okay
right. I think those corporate videos where everything's absolutely perfect all the time are gone. Now, video can be quite... The perception is that it's quite expensive to create, and social media is quite throwaway. So you're looking at maybe a lot of investment for something that only lasts a short amount of time. Do you know any tools or any things that could be quite interesting and useful to people to help them with the video creation process?
I'm so glad you asked this, because, again, we go back to there are so many tools available to us. Either they are free to start with and we just upgrade when we need it, or they're budget friendly. One of them you and I were just talking about before we hopped on our interview call here, and it's Wave. Wave, yeah. I think it's wave.net. I'm sure you'll put the URL in the show notes.
Yeah,
John.
We'll do. Yeah, sure.
But you know, Wave is one of those tools that I've used since almost they were doing a beta test back in the day. But it's such a powerful way for very little investment, and it allows you to create a video clip of something that you've already created, and to repurpose it, to lengthen, repurpose. Sometimes that word doesn't land well with a lot of corporate people, but what it does is it lengthens the life of that piece of content that you already created. So maybe you don't love video and it took so much for you to create that 2, 3, 4, 5 minute video. Now you can take that video using a tool like Wave. You can convert it into so many different pieces of content to stretch out the life so that you don't feel like, oh, now I got to create another 5 minute video. No, take that video, and using a tool like Wave allows you to repurpose it and stretch it out one video into maybe 2 weeks worth of content that you can sporadically share on different platforms, because that tool allows you to size it and share it on those different platforms according to what their specs are.
I spoke to, I'm going to say Daniel, I think. I haven't got the notes in front of me. I think it was Daniel, who's the CMO of Wave, on a podcast a few weeks, a couple of months ago or something. And he was saying exactly what you've just said. It's not the fact that you create this piece of video and you use it once. You create this little piece of video and you use it again and again and again. So it's worth spending time and effort doing it.
Absolutely. And I think it's Daniel Glickman.
Yes.
And, you know, with him also, I will say this. It's like you can also create that video using one of my favorite tools right now is Loom, L-O-O-M. It's free to start with. I actually have the paid version now. It's a whopping $10 a month. You get a lot more. But the free version allows you to record up to 5 minutes. You can record either you face to camera, or you can record just your desktop, or you can record face to camera plus desktop. It is so powerful. You can record up to 5 minutes with the free version. You can record up to 100 videos with that. Now, you record the video, you download it, and now you upload it into Wave and carve it out into all these little pieces. It's just so powerful. And again, you have the option to show up on camera or just share your desktop. And you can come up with a list of, you know, 10 topics just off the top of your head that you can share your desktop and show somebody how to do something. That is you sharing value. That is you showing up on social media, creating a valuable solution for your audience while you're showing your expertise and building and strengthening that know, like, and trust factor. It's a win-win.
Yeah, absolutely. I've not heard of Loom before. I shall look that up, and I'll leave a note in the show notes as well, a little link in the show notes. I could talk to you forever about this. Maybe you could come back and talk to us about tools and software.
Oh, I'd
bits.
Love to.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. John, I have so many of those, so I'd love to come back.
Absolutely. Yeah, that would be really... Now, Veronica, tell us where you are. Where's your website? Social media bits and pieces.
My website is veronicasagastumi.com, and that is my central hub, is where I share a ton of free resources. And at the footer of my website, you can find all my social media channels. It's usually my name, but sometimes it varies. And if I will say this, I often ask people to send me a note. There's a contact page there on my website. I still review and answer all of the notes that I get, whether it's a question or, you know, just tell me what you loved about this episode when you listened to it. What was your biggest aha or takeaway? Or if you just have a question about something that you heard here on the podcast, I'd love to hear it.
That's fantastic, Veronica. Thanks ever so much for that. Thanks for your time as well. Really appreciate
it. Thank you, John. It was my pleasure.
Thanks again to Veronica for her time. Don't forget to check all the links in the show notes and pop along and say hello. Now, if you've enjoyed this episode, you can subscribe for more. There is more on Apple Podcasts, on Spotify, your favorite podcast player. It's everywhere. Just search for Not Another Marketing Podcast. You can find our previous podcasts on the website, which is jtid.co.uk/podcasts. Thanks for listening.